From the heart of the Carolinas, in this time of crisis, a voice of clarity, of comfort, and comedic exhortation.
Corona is spreading. This is no joke. It's no time to work or roam. The way you can fight it is simple, my friends. Just stay the at home.
This is the Vince Coakley radio program.
And if you live in North Carolina, you darn well better stay home after 10 p.m. beginning tomorrow night. You must comply, or else. Welcome to our Thursday broadcast. Good to be back with you. Social media posts from my friend Billy Hallowell. It's really right on the money, and it covers several of the things we'll be talking about today. Shocker! The media wore Hunter Biden before the election. Dems didn't trust the vaccine. School absolutely had to be closed. Flash forward a few weeks. Everyone is mirroring Trump. Schools must be open. Biden under investigation. Politics is just awful. What have I said to you time and time again? Politics corrupts everything. And it is mind-boggling to see how this happens over and over again. We'll get to the Hunter Biden story a little bit later on in the broadcast. And it is crazy, again, just how social media dealt with this story about Hunter Biden before the election. And now the very story they were trying to block, they did block before the election, all of a sudden, guess what? It's true. There's an investigation ongoing. As I said, we'll get to that in a bit. The thing that continues to dominate so much of our attention, and there's no way to get around this. This is just reality. The COVID-19 issue, as much as we may want to come to a place we don't have to focus on this, it's ubiquitous. Everywhere we go, in our workplaces, shopping, whatever it is. Today is a big day. A committee crucial for clearing that COVID-19 vaccine here in the United States. Remember, it's already been cleared in the United Kingdom, and they're vaccinating people. There's an all-day meeting that's going on today. Depending on how it votes, the nation's first doses could ship as early as tomorrow. The external expert committee, they will review data from Pfizer and German startup BioNTech on their vaccine. It's called BNT162B2. And by day's end, they'll vote whether the U.S. Food and Drug Administration should authorize the country's first COVID-19 vaccine. The company's requesting an emergency use authorization, shy of a full approval, while they have compiled as much short-term safety and effectiveness data as typical with any vaccine. This is a compressed process. The FDA wants to assure us no corners have been cut here. If the Independent Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee recommends that authorization, the FDA expected to sign off on the vaccine, possibly as soon as late today. Another committee, convened by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, they will meet Friday and Sunday to officially determine who should receive the first doses. And depending on the timing, the first American could start to be vaccinated by the weekend, though it's more than likely to happen on Monday. So, either way, my hope and prayer is this is the beginning of the end of at least the crisis aspect of COVID-19. Now, as we've heard about viruses, they really don't ever go away. But the hope is the lockdowns and all of the horrible consequences in terms of deaths, hospitalizations, the economic damage. Hopefully this is the beginning of the end. One of the things I am very, very careful to do on this broadcast is to communicate the gravity of this. Because I do think, and I've seen so many social media posts that I think are absolutely too dismissive of this virus, especially when you have people who are dying and people, frankly, who are maimed maybe for life right in front of us. I just think it communicates such a profound disrespect to those who really have died or have suffered from this and will continue to suffer. Case in point, my friend Chad, who I went to high school with, just this morning, this is what he posted. COVID is a roller coaster. I am 7 months post-COVID and still need oxygen. Let me remind you again. This isn't some old person in a nursing home. Although we should not dismiss that either. But I'm trying to make the point to you. This is a person who's about my age. I want that to be understood. I'm 7 months post-COVID and still need oxygen and get fatigued quickly. The mental quandary in the move from triathlete and professional wrestler to dreading the trip upstairs in your own house is far more challenging than being in a coma 6 months ago. I couldn't care less if you wear a mask, gather in mass, or run naked through the streets. Most of you will be fine, and some won't. Just understand, I still have your back either way. Can I just say, this is one of the reasons why Chad is my friend, and I'm proud to call Chad my friend. You don't see any virtue signaling, any judgment in this post, anything derogatory toward anybody. This guy has been through hell and back. He's not judging. I've got your back. This is what he's saying. Isn't that awesome? On the response to COVID-19, the leadership out of Raleigh, Marie posted this on social media. I don't even think Marie is a Republican or conservative. Here's what she posted this morning. Just like little children being sent to their rooms, you're told to not come out from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. And just like that, you do it without questioning crap. I substituted a word there. Is this what we're doing now? Are we just going to accept every and anything now? We will all get what we deserve for not opening our mouths to at minimum ask why. Make it make sense, darn it. What's really going down from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. and why do you need us to be tucked away? And again, I'm mentioning this is not some fire-breathing conservative woman. She raises a very good question, a fair question. Coming up, we go into the election issue with some very interesting perspectives on what is ahead for the U.S. Supreme Court. What will they do? We'll talk about that and much more as we continue our Thursday broadcast. Stay with us. Back on the broadcast. We are very closely watching what happens today at the United States Supreme Court. This is going to be a very interesting case because here's the argument that Texas is making. It's basically saying that these battleground states, what they did is they made decisions about elections without the legislature. The way the Constitution works, the legislatures are supposed to make any changes in election law. These were not made by legislatures. These were made by single individuals or committees or election boards. And on that basis, Texas is saying these election results ought to be challenged. Here to provide some insight on this is an attorney and a friend as well, who is very closely watching this case along with the rest of us. Don Brown back with us. Good morning. Welcome, sir.
Hey, good morning, Vince. Thanks for having me back this morning.
Well, I first want to get your description for us folks who are not mired in the law and understanding the ideas and the principles that are likely to be reviewed by the court. What does this mean for the court to, they're asking for these briefs from the states that have been challenged here. Tell us about this process and where it goes.
What happens is, you did a pretty good job of giving a thumbnail on what the Texas petition is about. And of course, the Article 3 of the Constitution gives what we call original jurisdiction for lawsuits brought by one state against the other, meaning that Texas did not have to file in the local district court and go up through the appeals court. They can file directly in the Supreme Court. And the idea is this case makes it unique among all the others that have been filed, and you bring four of the problem states in as defendants all at once, giving the court an opportunity, should they act, to provide equitable relief under Article 3 to make sure that those illegal, votes that have been cast in those four states are, are at least declared to be unconstitutional, and put the case back into the laps of the state legislatures in those four states. Now, the court did order the respondent states to file briefs today by, I think, 3 p.m., and then from that point, the court will make a decision on whether to hear arguments, to issue any type of injunctive relief without hearing arguments, or possibly to dismiss the case if they decide to go that route as well. We know that we don't believe Justice Alito, for example, has been very happy with Pennsylvania, because, as I pointed out before, and I'll say again, these four states who are being sued are basically throwing the Constitution in the trash can, because only the state legislature under the elections clause of Article 1 can set the rules for elections. And what's happened is unelected bureaucrats have basically moved everything around and created an opportunity basically for massive fraud, which is what we have. There's evidence of it, and it's pretty much overwhelming.
You know, it's going to be interesting here to watch this, because I think a lot of people are looking in this in on this situation, and they're thinking about votes. And we're going to hear some audio from another constitutional attorney who weighs in on this as well. And the thing is, if I understand this correctly, they don't even have to get into the minutiae of votes that are legitimate or illegitimate. Those things don't even matter at some point, do they?
They don't have to get into that. If you go back to Bush versus Gore, if you recall that famous case, the Supreme Court ultimately stopped counting, but the Supreme Court wasn't, never set as a standard, you have to have a certain number of votes that will show the election be overturned before you act. No. In Bush versus Gore, basically, the U.S. Supreme Court determined that because Palm Beach County was continuing to recount and continuing to do this, that, and the other, it created a separate standard from the standards of the other counties in Florida, which was a violation of the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. And so the Supreme Court could determine that there had been violations of the Equal Protection Clause in such a way as to make the presidential election November 3rd illegitimate in those states and send it back to the legislature. It doesn't have to get in the minutiae of votes. But I can tell you there are hard numbers on these votes that we have that show that the illegal votes go beyond the margin of Biden's alleged victory in each one of these states. But the court does not have to get in that. You're correct. And that's the beauty of the approach that's taken by Attorney General Paxton in this case.
Wow, that's a pretty interesting thing to consider. Because and you tell me about this, but I have the sense that a lot of people, if there were to be some sort of judgment from the Supreme Court on this that would affirm the argument from Texas, there are a lot of people that will be completely clueless about this. They will not understand this, will they?
Well, of course. I mean, most people are probably not paying attention. So I would be no doubt that so many people would be clueless, but you got to kind of follow what's going on here. It's pretty fundamental. Pennsylvania was already playing, fast and loose with the election law even before election day, and Republican Party of Pennsylvania, filed a merge petition with the court. Then the court split 4-4. Ginsburg had passed away, and Roberts voted with the liberals, so the court could not take action. But we know that Justice Alito basically, slapped Pennsylvania on the hand that time and ordered them to segregate ballots. Apparently, they did everything they could even to ignore that order. So you're right. A lot of people won't understand the court. If the court takes some sort of equitable action to declare these processes in these four states to have violated the Constitution and send it back to the legislatures, which is what the relief is, then you're going to have a lot of people raising Cain in the streets, and so that's one of the reasons a lot of people are afraid to touch this. It's kind of a radioactive thing. You have political considerations that may drive the court as well as legal considerations, but legally, in my mind, there is no doubt that these four defendant states, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan, have thrown the Constitution of the United States in the trash can by making up rules as they go by unelected officials to accommodate whatever result they're trying to drive in this presidential election.
And what we heard as we talk about this, Don Brown, we had states were saying, oh, we're concerned about COVID, and so we need to make special provisions for this or that. And what you're saying, Don Brown, is it doesn't matter that the Secretary of State or other official cannot just arbitrarily decide this is what we're going to do different now. They don't have the authority to under the Constitution. That's the point that you're making here. Then we go to the legislature. We only have a couple of minutes left here, actually a little over a minute. Then what happens with the legislatures?
Well, the legislatures have to decide what, if they've been given cover. See, some of the legislatures like Michigan and Georgia, they think they're bound by law to send electors, at least certain legislators think they're bound by law to send electors to the Electoral College consistent with the popular vote. That's not what the Constitution says, but they believe their state law says that. The Supreme Court could give them cover to say, listen, these electors, the electors sent based upon the popular vote here would be unconstitutional. You go back to square one. So even still, though, if that happens, these Republican legislatures, and there are six Republican, every one of these states have Republican legislators. These members of the legislature are going to have to do a gut check. They're going to have to do a gut check because a lot of them are afraid to do what's right. A lot of judges are afraid to do what's right here. And this is going to be a real gut check for the Supreme Court because this is the Constitution has been thrown in the trash can. The question is, are they going to have the political will to do something about it?
Wow. And this could be a real mess. There's really no nice way to say this. Attorney Don Brown, thanks a lot for your insight on this. And depending on what happens today, very quickly, in about 10 seconds, what's your gut on what happens here?
I think the Supreme Court will take the case and will declare these votes to be unconstitutional. And it's going back to the legislature.
That's all right. Stay with us, folks. Thanks, Don Brown. Back on the broadcast, interesting to hear that conversation with Don Brown, who thinks the Supreme Court not only is going to hear this case, but they are ultimately going to decide, yes, what happened in those states that Texas is challenging was unconstitutional. Can you imagine? And I go back to what I said yesterday, because I'm not trying to be in your face with anybody about anything, but I was sharing about this Facebook friend of mine, goodness, and all of the taunting, ugly posts. Would this not be just the ultimate, this is what you get for thinking this thing is over and celebrating, measuring the drapes in the White House, only to watch all of this come crashing down? I mean, I just think this is a this is a fascinating set of circumstances. We will see how this plays out. I believe these filings are due from the states that have been challenged. They are due by this afternoon. Now, how long it'll take the justices of the Supreme Court to review these and to make a decision on whether they're going to take the case, that's another issue. By the way, the Senate is going to hold a hearing next week on irregularities that took place during the 2020 presidential election. Ron Johnson, who's chairman of the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee, said in a statement, "I'm mindful that many of the issues that have been raised have been and will continue to be appropriately resolved in the courts. But the fact remains, a large percent of the American public does not view the 2020 election result as legitimate because of apparent irregularities that have not been fully examined. This is not a sustainable state of affairs for our country, and it's not. The only way to resolve suspicions is with full transparency and public awareness. That will be the goal of the hearing." So this is coming up next week. Additional details, including witnesses, those will be made available next week. According to officials, witnesses, whistleblowers, data experts, some level of fraud and other irregularities occurred during the 2020 election. So, I thought you should know about that. This is something new that has developed. The fact that a committee is going to look into this. And you know where I stand on committees. Most of the time, they amount to nothing. But I thought you ought to know anyway. I want to quickly get to another legal perspective, which very much is along the lines of what you heard from my friend Don Brown. This was John Eastman, who is a constitutional scholar, a guest on the Laura Ingraham program. And he's pretty much addressing the same things and kind of affirms with a little bit more, adding a little bit of his perspective about what is likely to happen at the Supreme Court. And the first thing he talks about here is the core issue. And again, I come back to this. It is very important that people understand this. This is not about, okay, let's find out whether these machines malfunctioned and manufactured votes or they switched votes. We aren't even at that level. That's micro level. We are talking about the broader constitutional issue. And I'm just double checking here with John. Do you not have Eastman video? You have nothing. That is not a good sign, which means that our new email address is not working. So we will send it to the old one to remedy that situation. And so that you can hear the perspective. We'll come back to this a little bit later on because I think this is vitally important for people to understand this. Because I'm just going to tell you right now, folks, if the court does decide, A, to take this up, and B, if they ultimately decide that what happened here in this election was unconstitutional by these states that made changes in election processes without the legislature, if they decide this was unconstitutional, you better brace yourself. And I'm not trying to scare anybody. But all the preparations that were made before Election Day with concern, there could be violence, you haven't seen anything yet. Because there'll be a lot of people profoundly ticked off. Profoundly ticked off. And complaining about being disenfranchised, yada, 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 yada. If it does go this way, you need to understand this. That any disenfranchisement, and let's start developing the true narrative right now. Any disenfranchisement that occurs goes right to the feet of the bureaucrats and the politicians who made these decisions without authorization. It's their fault. Don't blame Republicans. Don't blame Donald Trump. Don't blame Fox News. Don't blame anybody. But the bureaucrats and the politicians in your own state and everybody else, if you are ticked off by the results, if indeed the court does rule in favor of Texas, if you are ticked off as a person living outside of those states, again, remember where your anger needs to be directed. At these state leaders who made these decisions without authorization. That's what it comes down to. And you can't blame anybody else. It's really that simple. Not being a smart aleck here. Now, at the top of the broadcast, I shared with you a kind of a rundown of some things a friend of mine was posting about. It was a pre-election perspective on what was going on. All of the things the media was portraying, basically showing, oh, the COVID thing is out of control and everybody's dying. Hunter Biden story, there's nothing to it. This is just some crazy conspiracy theory. Well, now we've got the truth. We're hearing the truth. We've got a vaccine. We've also got a Hunter Biden story that is developing. And it's confirming everything that people like you and I knew before the election. By the way, they actually did a poll. And they found that a lot of people who voted for Joe Biden, that at least some of those people would not have voted for Joe Biden had they known about any number of Biden potential scandals or things about Mr. Biden's history that the media has covered up. We really do have a mainstream media that is complicit along with big tech. We already know that's happening with Facebook. It's really insane what Facebook and Twitter have been trying to do, and frankly, what they have successfully done. Coming up on the broadcast, we're going to talk about the Hunter Biden story. And again, this is everything we knew before the election. But very convenient to bring this out now. We'll talk about it coming up. So before we go into talking about Hunter Biden and this story that has been pretty much buried by the mainstream news media, I do have that audio I want to share with you from a constitutional scholar touching on the Texas election lawsuit. The first thing he's talking about, again, is the core issue here. And again, we're not getting into specifics of vote counting or vote ballot harvesting, whatever other irregularities may have occurred. This is not about that. It's about the processes, the election processes. Let's listen first to John Eastman, who's a constitutional scholar, speaking about the core issue.
One of the things that most people don't know is, you know, the Supreme Court normally is the appellate court of last resort. But in a couple of types of cases, they have original jurisdiction. And in one of those types of cases, it's original and exclusive. And that group are cases between two states. We didn't want states warring with each other. And they gave this power to settle disputes between the states to the Supreme Court exclusively. So Texas has named Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, and Wisconsin for violating election law. Now, the underlying issue there is a terrific one for Supreme Court, because it doesn't turn on proof of the allegations of fraud and the Dominion machines and all these other things that are huge evidentiary matters. It turns on a very simple legal question. Did these states conduct an election in violation of their state law? Because Article 2 of the U.S. Constitution says that the body that has the sole authority to create the manner for choosing presidential electors is the legislature of the state. And they do that by their state statutes. And when the Pennsylvania Secretary of State ignores those state statutes, sends absentee ballots out contrary to those state statutes, doesn't do voter identification or signature checking contrary to those statutes, those violations of statutes that were designed to prevent fraud are enough to trigger the federal constitutional violation that Texas has alleged.
Whoa. And again, can you just imagine? And you know, part of, and I'm not being nasty here. I'm just being honest and straightforward with you on this. The level of understanding about these kinds of issues is pretty low for people in the mainstream news media. I'm just going to say it rather bluntly. There are a lot of ignorant people And I'm not saying this, you know, as a rude comment. I'm just being honest with you. A lot of these people, they are lightweights mentally. They really are. There's not a lot of depth there. So they're immediately going to be thinking about, well, these voters were disenfranchised if the court goes in that direction. Not recognizing that the people who made the mistake are the bureaucrats and the politicians, not the voters. Doesn't have anything to do with Donald Trump either. Nothing to do with Donald Trump. Has a lot to do with people who decided that they were going to make changes in election processes and that they had the authority to do so. And they've done it with impunity. Vince, if these elections were overturned, I know I can see this country burning for years to come. It would never be the same. Thanks for the info, Vince. I like to keep my enemies close. That's why I listen to your shop. Really? And we have this. I'm not advocating violence in any form, but if the course the court actually sees for Texas, I will take up my arms and defend my wife, mother-in-law, and my dogs. Because I know. This is kind of scary. That riots will happen. Oh, my goodness. Also this, everyone's talking about riots, looting, burning down of cities if Trump wins. That's nothing compared to what 100 million patriots will do if he doesn't. Hint, refer to 1776. I think we have a powder keg here, don't you think? By the way, here's the other comment from John Eastman. And this is on the subject of whether the court's even going to take the case, because they may look at these briefs today. The response from the states that have been challenged basically said, you know, listen, Texas is saying that you guys unlawfully, unconstitutionally made changes. What do you say? They come back with their statements today, their briefs today, and the court can look at this and say, you know what? No, thank you. We're not going to touch this with a 10-foot pole. They could do that. In fact, John Eastman says when it comes right down to it, there really is no guarantee. Here's what he
said. They could still kick it out. The way original jurisdiction works, the court has claimed to have, even on state-on-state cases, some jurisdiction discretion on whether to take it or not. So Texas had to file a motion for leave to bring this original action, and that's what the defendant states have been asked to respond to.
What's
but
your
I
gut?
Think they said it so
What's your
quickly
gut?
Because. Of,
What's your gut? Will they take it?
My guts, they're going to take it. My guts are going to take it and look at it on the merits. See, this is an extremely important legal issue that the Supreme Court has already twice in our history said if election laws of the state are not followed, that violates the federal constitution. They did that in Bush versus Gore, and they said that back in 1892 in a case called McPherson versus Blecker.
And again, how is this going to go over? How is this going to go over? If the court first decides they're going to take this up, and then we have a ruling, Texas is right, then this goes back to legislatures. What do they decide? What do they do with this? My goodness. Can I just encourage you, those of you who are inclined to do so, let me remind you again, now's a really good time to pray. I'm serious about this. Pray for our country that all of this is resolved in a peaceful and also, what's the other word I would use? In a just manner. How's that? Peaceful and just. I think that's a great combination. Coming up, we'll talk about China. Yes, it's back in the news, and Hunter Biden. Stay with us. Hour number two of our broadcast, and we've been talking about what is going on with the Supreme Court. They're awaiting the response from several states accused of violating the Constitution. Coming up, we're going to talk about Hunter Biden. Also, a really weird scandal that's developing around a member of Congress. Let's first go to a couple of calls here, beginning with, let's try Tony first in Charlotte. Good morning, Tony.
Yeah, what's going on, Vince?
Good to talk to you, man.
Yeah, you know, man, the only reason that they're doing this stuff is trying to keep Trump out of jail. You know he's going to jail. You know that, don't you?
Oh, of course.
He's going to jail. Yeah, New York.
And what we go to what we go to jail for? What's going to be the charge?
He's going to go to jail for all the sins he's committed since he's been on this earth. He's going to jail, man. He's just a terrible dude. And you know what, man? The Supreme Court is some smart people, and they know what time it is, and they're going to just toss this right. It's not even going to the Supreme Court. I guarantee you that.
You don't think they will take the case? Now, now I've got to ask you, what happens if they take the case, and what happens if they rule in favor of Texas? What will you think about that, Tony?
Well, I would think that, man, that boy, I tell you what, Armageddon. That's all I can think.
You really think so?
Yeah, well, you know, the thing about it is, man, you can't change the will of the people, man.
Tony... This is exactly what I knew was going to happen. You can't look at this. Is not about, quote, the will of the people. This is about the will.
Exactly.
Wait a second,
about.
Tony. Let me help you out here, because you need to understand this. This is not the will of the people. This is about the will of politicians and bureaucrats who decided they were going to substitute their judgment for the legislature. That's the problem, Tony.
The thing about it is Republicans always shouting state rights, state rights, state rights. Now the states had did what they wanted to do, and now they're saying, oh, the state's wrong, state's wrong, state's wrong. They need to make up their mind what they want. States,
well,
states,
some
government right.
The states can be right, and they can be wrong. It's not something that you can just make a definitive decision on all the time, Tony. But
let me say this to you then. Okay.
Go ahead.
So therefore, if the Supreme Court decides to hear Texas's case, okay, if they decide to hear that case, and then they say, okay, we're going to send it to the legislatures, and everybody knows that in those swing states, most of the legislatures are Republican control, right? And so the Republicans say, well, we're going to go ahead and elect Donald Trump to be the president. Is that not stumping the will of the people in those states?
Well, you can call it whatever you like, but the blame does not go to the legislatures. It goes to the people who screwed around with the election process. That's who you've got to be mad at, not the Republicans.
He's been mailing in his ballot since he's been president and before he was president. So what's wrong with mail-in ballots?
You're missing the point, Tony. It's not about mail-in ballots specifically. It's about
they're going to turn an election on a technicality, Vince?
I'm saying that if you violate the Constitution, there are consequences, Tony. That's all I'm saying. And it remains to be seen. Good to talk to you. Always entertaining to have the conversation with you. Let's go next to Gary. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning, Vince. How's everything?
All right, sir.
Okay. A little comment you made before about if and when this happens and it could turn over. What an in-your-face the Democrats will be. What you got to do is get a guy like Danny DeVito to play Louis De Palma and give him that bump. And along with that, give him a Fred Mertz pants routine, too.
Oh, my gosh. Gary, what are we going to do with you? I very much appreciate your call. Let's quickly go out to Ryan. Good morning, Ryan.
Hey, Vince.
Yes, sir. Doing pretty good, sir.
I just wanted to call. I mean, I'll make it quick. I mean, I'll try to make it quick. I have more to say, but I'm not going to be able to say it all. But I just feel like, in general, as a proud American, somebody who's proud of my country, I've never been more embarrassed right now, ever than I am right now. And it's just everything in general. It's not one particular thing, but I think it's everything that's transpired since March, since COVID first hit. I mean, as people, everybody's turned into a COVID-19 expert. Then a few months later, everybody turned into a social unrest expert. Now they're all political and election experts. The way we've dealt with all these things, I think, is an embarrassment. I know people that are from other countries, and like, they make comments all the time about everybody's laughing at the United States right now, because we do look kind of foolish right now, and we're too strong and too great of a country for this. I'm a I'm a proud black man and also a proud law enforcement officer who also was a Trump supporter. And so I mean, I'm disappointed in the way these things have turned out. I hope all we want is for everything to be done right and for the election to be fair.
I hear you.
I see what's going on, but I just think as Americans, I think we're doing ourselves a huge disservice right now because everything's a problem. You know, we're so divided. Everything bothers everybody. Family members are not talking. I know this personally from people. Family members are not talking right now to each other over this stuff. Friends are not friends anymore. People deleting each other. I don't need people with degrees from Facebook University or social media university talking to me about COVID-19 or social unrest or election stuff.
I mean, I hear you, man.
People have good points, but a lot of these people don't even know what they're talking about. It's just amazing right now the direction we're going for a country that's so strong like this. It's supposed to be the best country.
You know, Ryan,
I'm just ranting like this.
No, you're not.
I can't talk to really anybody. I've had to call the radio show, talk to somebody open-minded like you about it because I can't talk to people around me about it.
I hear you, man. I'm fully with you. I'm fully with you. I appreciate your call. And as I've said before, really appreciate your heart, Ryan, and understanding what's wrong here. I want to quickly get to this Hunter Biden story. And again, this is a story. There's really nothing new here. This is the sad thing about it. We knew this before the election. And let me do a hats off to Politico for what they're doing now. I don't know what they were doing before the election. Here's their headline. Justice Department's interest in Hunter Biden covered more than taxes. What's the story you're hearing in the media now? Oh, this is about his taxes. Politico's reporting federal prosecutors also have investigated foreign ties and possible money laundering. How much attention is this part getting? More extensive than that statement from Hunter Biden indicates, according to a person with first-hand knowledge of the investigation. In other words, Politico has done some journalism. Imagine that. On Wednesday, Hunter Biden said he'd been contacted about a tax investigation out of the U.S. Attorney's Office in Delaware. In addition to Delaware, the Securities Fraud Unit in the Southern District of New York also scrutinized Hunter Biden's finances, according to the person with direct knowledge of the investigation. The person said that as of early last year, investigators in Delaware and Washington were also probing potential money laundering and Hunter Biden's foreign ties. This person spoke on the condition of anonymity because they're not authorized to discuss the matter publicly. You know what this says? You know what this says? It further confirms Facebook is an evil organization. There's really no other way to put it. Facebook and Twitter blocking these stories about Hunter Biden before the election, when everything that we heard about this case, we heard before the election. Just blows my mind. Love to get your thoughts on this and much more as we continue. Back on the broadcast. By the way, are we able to listen in on this person who's speaking right now, John? I know this. Please forgive me before I let you speak to this, let you listen to this. Let's listen in on the House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
Influence at universities in our country and the overtures they try to make to members of Congress. In terms of Mr. Swalwell, in the spring of 2015, the leadership of the House and the committee were informed that overtures from a Chinese person were being made to members of Congress. When that was made known to the members of Congress, it was over. You know, that was the end of any communication with those people. So it isn't, I think we should make sure that everybody knows what they are being subjected to. But I don't know that it means that we have to black background checks for every intern who comes into the Capitol. I do think that it's unfortunate that Mr. McCarthy is trying to make an issue of this when his leadership, we all found out at the same time, the Republican leadership and that several members had been approached.
Were you briefed on this?
We were all at the same moment, the House, Republican and Democratic leaders, and the leadership of the committee were briefed at the same moment. Make sure you know that, because he keeps going around saying, when did they know? We knew when they knew. And that, at that time, that was the end of it. But you know what he's trying to do? He's trying to deflect attention from the fact that he has QAnon in his delegation over there. And that, I think, is a danger in terms of our debate here about, you know, what the possibilities are for undue influence to members of Congress.
So government funding is going to come up again next Friday after the CR. Could you give us a sense about, I mean, you know how these packages work. Yeah. When do they need to come to some sort of agreement?
Okay, I think we've heard enough here. What I wanted you to hear, especially with the comments about the overtures that Chinese spies have apparently tried to make to members of Congress, and successfully so, apparently, with one in particular, Representative Eric Swalwell of California. Now, I don't know what Nancy Pelosi had to say before we actually went to this audio, but it's a whole lot of dancing around. Did you hear what she said? She said that Republicans are just trying to use this to distract from QAnon. Really? This woman is a complete moron. She really is. In addition to being corrupt, she's a moron. Here's the foundational story on which Ms. Pelosi is commenting. Representative Eric Swalwell, refusing to say if he had sex with an accused Chinese spy who cozied up to a slew of U.S. elected officials, including him, in a bid to infiltrate the U.S. political system. The 40-year-old congressman was among a group of Bay Area Democrats targeted by the honey trap, also known as Christine Fang, who entered the U.S. as a college student in 2011, spent the next 4 years wooing lawmakers to get close to sensitive government intelligence, according to a report in Axios. Now, this is what's scary. Mr. Swalwell, a member of the House Intelligence Committee, says he's cooperated with federal investigators into Fang. This is crazy. This is from his office. Representative Swalwell long ago provided information about this person whom he met more than 8 years ago and whom he hasn't seen in 6 years to the FBI. To protect information that might be classified, he will not participate in your story. Swalwell's office relied on the classified information line when Fox News' Tucker Carlson questioned them about whether the California Democrat engaged in sexual relations with Fang. Representative Eric Swalwell refusing to comment on allegations that he was intimate with his Chinese spy. His staff replied by saying they could not comment whether Swalwell had a sexual relationship because that information might be, quote, classified. Swalwell himself, in an interview with Politico, sidestepped the question about how intimate he was. Of course he does. We do know this woman apparently had sex with at least two Midwestern mayors as she tried to get information from them. Now, these are the people who have been hounding the president about Russian interference in the election. And by the way, at the end of the day, with the whole Russia thing, in regard to the president, it's one big giant goose egg. Nothing. And yet you've got this guy, this moron, on the Intelligence Committee. Boy, it really makes you feel secure, doesn't it? Well, one person who's not thrilled about this at all, and that is the House Minority Leader, who is making some pretty strong statements about what needs to be done with Mr. Swalwell. Here is Leader McCarthy.
This is only the tip of the iceberg, because remember what we're hearing. These are Chinese spies that go down to the level of a mayor. They court and help a city council member become a congressman. This congressman now gets on the Intel Committee. They are only selected from the Intel Committee by the leaders of their party, meaning Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi is one of the Gang of Eight, along with myself. Did Nancy Pelosi know this had transpired when she put him on the committee? We have our Senator, Dianne Feinstein, for two decades, the personal assistant that hear all the private phone calls in the car and others, a Chinese spy. Why did the Democrats pull out of the bipartisan China task force I had set up? Why did Speaker Pelosi pull out of that? Why have they denied certain bills that would hold China accountable that have passed the Senate not come to the floor? Why do they focus on Silicon Valley members of Congress? Why is he still on the Intel Committee, let known why is he still a member of Congress? Did Adam Schiff know, as chairman of that committee, that he had this problem? Remember what the Intel Committee gets: information that no other members are able to see. And remember what this member did. He was so preoccupied going after this president, he was not protecting our country from bad actors. When he questioned Comey, yeah, he literally set up the questionnaire of what happened to him.
I mean, this would be completely laughable. I mean, if this were not really serious business. By the way, Ms. Pelosi said before we went to her, I have no concerns with Representative Swalwell. Of course you don't. There is more evidence already to be concerned about this than any of this stupid Russia nonsense in regard to the president. And she's dismissing it. Completely dismissing it. This, you really can't make this stuff up, folks. You really can't. So we'll continue to watch this and see what the consequences may be for Mr. Swalwell. Because I don't think we've gotten to the bottom of what's going on here. You know, we need to focus on QAnon. You know, what really cracks me up is how many of these groups, how small they are at the end of the day. And the media wants to just have a field day talking about it as if there are millions upon millions upon millions of them. There aren't. Get a grip, people. Over on the text line, this texter says Swalwell's father's Facebook page has Fang as a friend, along with pictures of Swalwell and Fang together. Vince Pelosi's a moron, yet the media grovel at her feet. Yes, they do. They love to worship power, especially in the hands of Democrats. Someone listening to her speak earlier said, what the? She sounds like Joe Biden. Yeah, pretty much the same kind of crappy politician, lying, corrupt politician. That's what you get. Two dueling texts here. Please explain why Swalwell is a story. He's a single man. There was no cheating. He didn't know she was a spy. He ended the relationship when he found out. FBI said he did nothing wrong, so what's the story? Another texter saying this. Swalwell banged Fang. Claims nothing to see here. But honeypots only stay if there's usable info. She stayed 6 years with Swalwell. You tell me. Did she get info? That's Alan out of Greer. Very good question. That's what we need to find out. This person saying, Vince, QAnon has more reach than you realize. They posted a link to a video a couple of days ago. Has 959,000 views. All right. Ah, boy, what do you do, folks? Let's go out to a call from Terry. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning, Vince. I hope you're doing well.
Yes, sir.
Good, good. I tell you, one thing that's real telling is the FBI invested her for years. Something triggered them going to Swalwell and saying, your girlfriend is a Chinese spy. He tells her that she's under investigation, and she flees back to China. Now, what am I missing as far as the FBI looking after the national security of America?
So you're skeptical about how well they fulfilled that responsibility.
Well, I would think they would arrest her or do something and interrogate her or try to flip her or do something other than say, hey, your girlfriend's a spy. You better get her out of here before she's a, let's say, an embarrassment to the Democratic Party.
Yep. There are so many unanswered questions here, and we're going to find out at some point. It's certainly not going to be because of news conferences like we heard a few minutes ago, Terry. I do appreciate your call. It's really crazy. By the way, another crazy text here. Vince was one of the Midwest mayors, Lori Lightfoot. That is awful. You should be ashamed of yourself. This text you're saying, so blame Donald Trump. Yeah. Also, this Chinese operatives must produce intel or they move on to the next dumb Democrat. Oh, my goodness. Let's go out to Jerry. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning. You hear me?
What are your thoughts, sir? We got you loud and clear.
All right. I listened to that crap Pelosi spewed out on the show a while ago. I can't stand to even listen to her, much less look at her. She's uglier than homemade sin.
Oh, gosh.
And I just wonder how many other people think that. And have you ever noticed how ugly Zuckerberg is?
So are you calling to pass judgment on people you deem to be ugly? Is that why you called me today, Jerry?
Just those two. That's the only two in the United States.
Oh, those are the only two. Okay, Jerry. Yeah, I don't quite know what to do with that information, but I do appreciate your call. Save us. Let's go out to Frank in Charlotte. Good morning, Frank. Welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
All right, sir.
Okay, look, I've got a couple of comments. The first one had to do with comments. If you listen to the McCoy show at all this morning, Bill Graham says that he doesn't think that Texas has got standing before the court in this case. And I disagree. My degree, I got a correspondence course, a law degree from Podunk U, and I'm sure he's got one from a prestigious university. But in a national election, we have two offices that are elected by the entire country, all 50 states and whatever. And if a state conducts its elections in a lawful manner, and they want to contest what they feel to be unconstitutional elections held in their state, since all of the 50 states elect a president, I don't know how he could determine that they have a snowball's chance in Hades of even being able to present legal arguments before the court.
Telling me you're skeptical that anything's going to happen here?
I don't know what's going to happen. I do believe that the Supreme Court should hear the oral arguments and then pass it based on the evidence presented before the court rather than just shunning it aside without anything really happening first. They need to have the oral arguments, let them rule on it based on their own legal expertise and conscience.
Yep.
And certainly Texas has got standing. If the man's elected president that they don't like and they conduct their election legally and these other four states did not, the unconstitutional. I think it's a prima facie case that they weren't constitutional because they violated the Constitution when they started changing the laws without the legislature doing it.
Yep.
Agreed?
It's pretty simple, isn't it, Frank? It's really not any more complicated than that. And on that basis, if they agree with you, Frank, and agree with the state of Texas, boy, there are going to be some very interesting days ahead. I wanted to throw out one other quick word. As you know, we've got some economic challenges ongoing because of COVID-19. Give you a sense of the devastation that is being experienced all across the country. 10,000. I want you to think about this moment. 10,000 of America's restaurants have closed in the past 3 months. 17% permanently closed. And the industry, we understand, is in further danger, according to a new report. This is one of the reasons the National Restaurant Association publicly pleading with Congress to pass new stimulus to help the industry. 110,000 permanently shuttered in 2020. 110,000. And I'm thinking of all the folks who've lost their jobs. This is a challenging time for a lot of people, for sure. Stay with us.